Welcome to Joint Ventures, a podcast exploring developments in autoimmune disease and what they mean for real clinical practice. I'm Jack Arnold, an academic clinical lecturer in rheumatology based in Leeds in the UK, with a particular interest in systemic lupus, deep learning, and clinical trials. And I'm joined by my co-host, Dr. Richard Buss, who's a consultant rheumatologist and psoriatic arthritis specialist, whose work focuses on translating emerging evidence into day-to-day care. We first worked together during our registrar training, and many of our early conversations revolved around complex immune-mediated cases that unfortunately didn't neatly fit into existing algorithms. And those patients, the ones where the guidelines ran out and clinical reasoning really began, are what led to this podcast.
And welcome. Thank you, Jack, for that introduction. And before we move into the mechanisms and trial data for the first episode, we thought we will step back and do something different to begin with, to cross-examine our own relationship with rheumatology, what drew us in the specialty, what keeps us here, and why we are so excited and interested in this field. So the context will help to explain why the science, what we will be discussing, actually matters for us and for our patients. And I thought the good way to start this would be, Jack, if you could tell us what got you into rheumatology, what created this interest at the beginning for you?
Yeah, so I suppose that's the million-dollar question, really, isn't it? So I had the privilege of training at the Royal Free Hospital during my medical training. And during that time, we had a fantastic mentorship from the rheumatology department there. Several of them were very, very active with us before finals and always really drew us into what made rheumatology interesting. I think I've always been drawn towards the diagnostic work. And I think we've spoken about this before, Richard. You know, you're trying to piece everything together, multiple different systems, multiple different blood tests, immune markers, everything, and trying to pull it all together into one result has always massively interested me. And it's enormously satisfying. I mean, I'm sure you probably say the same thing, that being able to turn up with people on the ward, asking you questions, not knowing how to pull it all together and being the one to be able to give them that answer and sort of unify it, just massively, I find that enormously satisfying. And I think it's the last of the generalists, really, isn't it? We manage things across a massive spectrum of disease. And I think that generalism for me is what drew me even within rheumatology into connective tissue disease, because it's massively multi-system and it's a massively rapidly moving field with new therapeutics. And I've just always found it incredibly rewarding and fulfilling to be able to sort of work in that sphere. So that's largely speaking what brought me into rheumatology. But how about yourself?
I think similar to you, early exposure was the key factor, what played a role when the time came to choose your specialty. Maybe not as early as you during med school. I only can remember a few episodes, a few lectures in rheumatology. We didn't have really much as medical students. But then my first hospital rotation as a qualified doctor was on a rheumatology ward, and the patients what I came across there absolutely amazed me. Similar to you, this complexity, the thinking what during the diagnostic process, what sometimes we have to do to kind of label these patients with a diagnosis, and some who have gone through different specialties through multiple tests and multiple investigations, and then you as a rheumatologist come and actually can put that together and give the patients and other clinicians the answer. So that really sparked me my initial interest, and I usually am the person who doesn't choose the easiest way, because I think, I'll be honest, when I started as a doctor, my understanding about autoimmune systemic conditions were quite poor. I think this lack of understanding and that exposure, what I saw early on, drew me to learn more and find out much more about it. And then nothing else afterwards didn't interest me as much as that first specialty, what I worked in as a qualified doctor, and that has led to following the training pathway to become rheumatologist. But thinking about why this specialty, what apart from that diagnostic part, when you're not limited to one organ or organ system as a rheumatologist, you have to look at multiple organ systems and look at the patient as a whole, what you kind of draw to the last true generalists and internists. But I learned that relationship, what you develop with the patient. Our patients, we see them, and once we diagnose, they remain under our care for forever. If you or they do not move, isn't it? We can't cure conditions. And this long-term relationship, what you can develop with the patients, and you can follow their journey through their course of the disease from the beginning when they present with disabling symptoms or with unexplained symptoms, you give the answer, you give the diagnosis, and then you start the treatment process, and that what kind of significant impact that have to the patients. And then there is ups and downs, there is flares, there is lack of treatment responses, there is secondary non-responses. So you have to always be very flexible with this, with our patients, and I think I really like that long-term relationship, what we are able to build with our patients. And finally, probably not only those patients who we diagnose with our conditions will we continue to follow up, but I really that feeling what you get when you see someone in a clinic as a new patient, and you can see how been worries from themselves or from conditions who have initially who have referred them to you about these autoimmune conditions, what most of the time feels quite serious and unexplained, and you can actually say with quite confidently that you do not have it. You don't have this condition which you've been thinking in your mind for past month or years. And that relief what those patients get at that moment, I think it's one of those feelings in medicine what I enjoy the most, to take the burden off their shoulders.
And I suppose reciprocally with that, even in those, you know, who you are delivering, you know, new diagnoses, we're now in a position and sort of in an expanding position to be able to really treat these effectively when they do arise, in a way that perhaps if we were working in this sphere in, you know, 30 years ago, we wouldn't have been able to intervene in the way that we can now. And I suppose to sort of move on from that, you know, the pace of change with therapeutics is extremely rapid, and there's two things for that from my point of view. One is that, similar to what you said about this drive to keep up with things and to learn about things, and you have to, it is a constant learning process all the time. But also just the ability to be able to say to people, look, you know, we've got these therapies now, we've got new ones coming out. You know, we are in a position to intervene, and we're in a position to make massive differences that keep people in work, that keep them, you know, healthy with their families. And we see them, as you say, over a long period of time. So we get to see the fruits and the benefits of how they are treated. So it's enormously.
As a specialty, in the past half century, we have so much change from going from this almost rehabilitation type of field where you admitted patients during a flare for a bed rest, seeing them joints eroding and destructing in front of your eyes, not be able to do anything, having only steroids and some other treatments which you don't really use, but were not particularly effective with high toxicity. Having advanced to such advanced treatments where we are blocking very narrow immune pathways, able to target cytokine-specific cells, and not even talking about anything more advanced. It's just amazing how the field has evolved and continues to evolve. And like you said, I think as a rheumatologist, you you can't not follow the latest developments, and because it's such a fast pacing scene, and I think it's a prime example as well in medicine where you, if you want or not, you have to kind of put a patient in the center of the care, because there's no two exact same conditions, and we're not treating really disease, we are treating the patient, isn't it? And everyone is very individual, their priorities are quite individual, and now this expanding field of treatment options, what we have to think what is the best for the patient, what is in front of us. And I know a lot of the times what we are able to use are driven by policymakers about cost and et cetera and guidelines. But at the core, it is what we think is best for our patient from all the arsenal of the treatments what we have. And I think if you don't have that very good understanding about patient, what you have in front of you, and about treatment options, what you have, then you are unable to put that together and provide the best care what our patients deserve.
Because it's an enormous balance, and there's a massive totality, I think, particularly within rheumatology, where you, as you say, you're balancing patient preference, new therapies, evidence bases, risk, comorbidities, you know, the enormous, you know, numbers of interactions and things that you have to benefit. You have to balance in that decision, all in the context of a very fast moving field. So it's enormously academically stimulating, but as you say, you know, also personally very satisfying to have these relationships with people where you really do get to know them very well over a period of time. And you're managing those sorts of complex issues, you know, on the day-to-day basis.
Yeah, I think, and that leads to the challenges what we face in rheumatology. We still do not understand pathophysiology behind our diseases fully. We know and certain mechanisms, but not have understood that deeply enough, isn't it? And then every patient presents quite uniquely. So there's no one textbook presentation of a certain condition. Patients tend to sometimes present quite late, especially in what I do a lot with axial spondyloarthropathies. Patients present after years, even decades of the symptom, when the first symptoms presented. So you are, from the beginning, you see the patient, you already start with not only disease activity, but you start with the damage, and then finding the balance between controlling disease with potential risks what our treatments come with, taking patient preference in all of that, and dealing with uncertainty a lot. Probably you will agree with me, in rheumatology we not always are able to name a condition what you have, and they're not able to say that the treatments will work. We always is this, and you have to be comfortable to feel uncertain about certain things, but try to do your best at the same time to what we know of, to provide the best treatment or the patients we think would benefit from. What do you think kind of challenges going forward in upcoming years to come we'll face?
It's tricky to say, isn't it? I mean, the complexity in rheumatology never goes away. It has never gone away. It diseases are very heterogeneous. We have, in many cases, imperfect biomarkers that guide our management decisions, and there will always be a management of treatment risk versus disease risk. And I suppose, you know, if you were to look at the modern, so the most up-to-date, or what's in vogue in rheumatology now, so something like CAR T-cell therapy, you know, fantastic results in lupus in early stage, research, but an enormous treatment risk there, and something that needs to to be balanced. And as we have these more intensive therapies, then we need to balance that, and that's going to be likely to be a growing problem. And I suppose one of the other challenges, over the long term that I think is improving is that we see people in clinic and, in many ways they are struggling with a disease or a condition that's largely invisible to people frequently. I mean, obviously, some people will have visible signs and things, but many don't have overwhelmingly obvious signs. And it's trying to sort of manage these patients and help them when they're living with a disability that many people won't understand very well. Although I will say that certainly awareness about certain conditions is massively improving. And, there's been a lot of movement towards that much better understanding of these things. But I think that will persist, in the future. I suppose you probably see that, a good example of that would be your SBA care, where people may not understand on a day-to-day basis.
It is, and I find that, and going back to what I said when what I said before, I think it's all about early detection to prevent from that damage to happen, isn't it? I think we will have much more treatments available. We will get better of treating inflammation if we simplify things. We will already are good at that, but I think it will advance and we'll get even better with that. But we'll never be able to reverse the damage once it has happened.
Yes.
And I think that will not be possible across all the diseases what we treat. So it is about finding the ways how we can diagnose early and intervene early to prevent from this damage to happen, to allow people live symptom free on the treatment, and that not only will evolve early detection, but understanding which treatments works best for which patients, and that's where the personal medicine will become coming back, finding some kind of models to predict response to certain therapies rather than blindly circulating through different therapies with different mechanisms of action until we find one. But we have lost the time. Patients have lived in ill health for years sometimes. We have accumulated damage before we have been able to control the disease. So that will be, I think, that will have to be a focus of work what we do in a very near future.
And I think, as you say, as you sort of to circle back to what you said earlier, we talk about rheumatology as operating within this sort of this gray zone, and whenever I have students or things talk to me about whether they would consider the field, I would say you have to be very comfortable with a huge degree of uncertainty. But part of that within rheumatology is there is substantial overlap both mechanistically and in presentation, certainly within connective tissue disease, between multiple different tissue types. And I think one of the things that I see happening, for example, over the next 20 years is moving away from this sort of siloing of you've got Sjögren's, you've got myositis, you've got lupus, and moving more towards, as we understand the pathophysiology better, a more mechanistic approach to it. So I think that that's something that's going to come on with years, and it's extremely exciting. We've sort of been left in the dust, haven't we, really, by our oncology colleagues who are sort of pioneering that sort of basket trial approach that we'll see in rheumatology at some point. But I can see that massively coming to the fore, particularly as the therapeutic armamentarium grows, then we're going to try and get these treatments into the hands and of people who will benefit from them, irrespective of what we initially labeled them as. That's an interesting sort of thought. Did you ever flirt with any other specialties, or was it always rheumatology? Or
To be honest, not really. I think when I was in med school, I wanted to become an orthopedic surgeon, I think as majority of the students want to become surgeons. But then very shortly after I graduated, I realized surgical specialty is not for me. I'm not that type of person who could do that. I admire all the surgeons, but I realized it would not fit for my personality. So, once I had that first lymph node replacement, I had quite a good understanding what I want. And when it came time to apply for specialties, I didn't apply for anything else really. And I didn't have a second option or backup to do. It was always, I set my mind to doing that. Did you do anything? Did you were considering doing anything?
I certainly didn't flirt with orthopedic surgery. I think I got a bit weak at the knees in my first placement in medical school, so I don't think that would ever have suited me. But briefly, I think I briefly flirted with the idea of, you know, of infectious diseases, mainly for many the significant overlap between the two. But I think
that's
a lot of long-term care and the ability to really get to know patients and forge those long-term relationships is what drew me into this really more than anything else. I can't say that I honestly did between those.
So I think that gave a sense of who we are and why this field continues to challenge and engage us. Rheumatology sits in unique intersection, deeply biological, deeply human, and evolving rapidly. And that evolution is exactly what we are going to explore in our next episode on joint ventures. In our upcoming episode, we'll be examining two new therapeutic options with completely new mechanisms of action, what we have not used in rheumatology so far. Nipocalimab, interacting with IgG recycling pathway, and deucravacitinib targeting TYK2. These represent different mechanisms, but a shared direction of travel from broad immunosuppression towards more precise control of immune signaling. This episode has been about why we care about the field, but the next one will focus on where the science is heading. See you next time.